Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Gravity Leadership Podcast, where we explore how to center our lives and our leadership in the love of God revealed in Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the disruptive cultural shockwaves of the 21st century.
Join us as we learn to take the love of God seriously as the force that holds all of us and everything together.
If you're loving this podcast, we invite you to go deeper and partner with us in our work by joining the Gravity Commons, our online community of practice for connecting and learning together.
As a member of the Gravity Commons, you get access to live podcast recordings with upcoming guests, as well as other opportunities to connect and learn together with us in real time,
including learning labs, member meetups, discussion boards, online courses, and our practitioner podcast. Go to gravityleadership.com/commons to find out more. See you in the commons.
Hey everybody, you're listening to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. My name is Matt Tebbe, and I'm joined by two of my friends, Christy Penley and Ben Sternke. Hey, y'all.
Hi there.
Hello, Matt. Hi, Christy. It's great to be with you today.
Here we are.
No.
Here we are looking at each
happy
other.
Happy day.
Hey, you know, sometimes sometimes happy when day. We do these podcasts, we talk about like what's coming up, what's coming next. And I'm excited because this weekend, Christy and I are going to be in New York City.
Woohoo!
New York City.
I haven't been to New York City in a long time.
You know,
I haven't either. I was just thinking about it the other day. I was thinking about New York.
I'm so sad that you're not going to be there, but you're going to be outside of Nashville. Yeah.
Well, you guys are going to be in New York doing what? Tell our listeners about it.
It's a little gathering called Half the Church. You go to halfthechurch.net, you can see. But we're chatting about women in the church and women leading alongside men. And Christy and I are going to be talking about that and leading a workshop, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
I'm really excited.
And we'll have like a booth space there so you can come visit us and come say hi. And it'll be loads of fun. I am jealous that you get to go to New York because I like New York. And I am going in the opposite direction, at least from Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. I'm going to Southern Missouri, which is, you know, as far as geography goes, it's okay. You know, no shade to my Southern Missouri friends.
Yeah.
I'm going to be down there facilitating an Enneagram transformation workshop for a church that we've worked with quite a bit, actually, over the last few years. Some lovely people that I value highly, and so I'm eager to meet people down there. So if you're in the New York area, look up halfthechurch.net. We'll put a link in the show notes, and if you're near Southern Missouri, look up. We'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah.
It's an Enneagram transformation workshop.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Come say hi.
Come see us.
Yeah. We're getting back out there. We're putting.
Yeah.
You know,
it's new. It's like I've got to work out these. Matt, you and I did a workshop. What was it, last weekend?
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember now.
Yeah.
I think it was last weekend. And I felt my muscles, you know, it's like when you work out after you haven't worked out in a while.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like, oh yeah, I'm remembering how to do this now.
Yeah,
talk in front of people, not into a microphone for a recording on a podcast, but in front of a room of people. That's different,
right?
Yeah.
Before COVID, I was maybe speaking one or two times a month in different places, and then COVID kind of like ended that. And in April, I had three different speaking engagements, and I was like looking at my calendar, going, "Oh my goodness, you guys, here we go.
Here you go.
Giddy up! I'm excited.
Dust off them pantsuits." Giddy up.
I need to miss.
Well, hey, you know, we do on this podcast invite listener interaction and questions and thoughts. And today we have a listener who wrote to us. We're calling him Phil from Philly. And he wrote to us about listening about handling church conflict, church abuse. And he wrote to us, we're going to read his email here on the podcast, but he basically was like, look, what about like pastoral leaders who don't realize that their presence and the way they embody power, that it's causing harm? What do you do? How do you love them? And I think it's a great stinking question, Phil. And so we sort of tackle that today and talk about some, how do you love people who are in your life, who have a modicum or a domain of power, and they don't realize the way other people experience it? So we sort of talk around that today.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, a whole episode about it. So
yeah, if you just do, because, if you,
listener, dear listener, yeah.
He wrote an email.
Just because someone wrote to us. Yeah. So if you, dear listener, have a question, feel free to write us. We take them, we read them all, and we take them all seriously. podcast@gravityleadership.com. We'll read your email and, you know, maybe do an episode. Who knows?
Who knows? And now?
Who knows?
Get ready.
Yeah. Should we just get into it? Do we have anything else to say?
No.
We talked about the events. I think we're good. Yeah.
Yeah. This is it. Yeah. Just settle.
Wear green on Thursday. That's my tip.
Oh, that's right.
Wear green on Thursday.
Oh, yeah, Thursday is St. Patrick's Day. My kids get St. Patrick's Day cereal, remember?
That's right. Oh, yeah, we remember. remember all right.
If this is all new to you, listen to last week's episode. Christy talked about her, all the activities that she has planned for St. Patrick's Day. Yeah.
All right. That's my tip. Wear green on Thursday, friends.
Pro tip. Wear green on Thursday. All right. Well, let's get into it.
All right, let's get in. Yeah.
You're listening to the Gravity Leadership Podcast. Once again, I'm Matt, joined by Christy. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
And Ben.
Hi, guys.
As usual. Gang's all here.
Gang's all here.
Gang's all here.
We, from time to time, actually, once or twice an episode at least, we do invite your feedback, and we give our email address out willy-nilly. Like we don't even care who emails us. We put it out there for all to use, and somebody used it. Actually, a lot of you use it, and we do email you back and say thank you.
But this episode is about one particular email we got.
We got an email from a listener who just started listening to our podcast and has been power listening through the podcast.
I'm impressed.
While he walks his dog, and like we got his permission, change his name.
Sequentially,
here.
He said sequentially. This is the thing that impressed me. Is he's like, it's going to take a while for me to catch up, but he's like a couple years away from catching up.
I don't know. He walks his dog every day, and he said he's running out of episodes, so we got to keep pumping these out. When you get to this one, he'll be like, oh yeah, that's when they did that.
Hey, that's
anywho, he says, greetings. I am an elder at an old church in the Philadelphia area, so along with many of your guests, let me start by apologizing for being Reformed. Now, let me say, okay, he's going to come back to this joke, and we need to address this. let me say that I appreciate your sense of humor. Thank you. I am in the midst of considering leaving my church, where I've been an elder for over 20 years. It's been a hard process, but I'm realizing that I have a vision of church that is not happening here, and I'm asking if maybe I'm called somewhere else. I've been listening to your podcast from the beginning, and I'm now somewhere in the 50s with the series on power. I really resonate with lots of what you say, other than the evils of Reformed theology. okay, now we get into the meat of what he's talking about here. I was listening to the podcast Healing from Spiritual Abuse with Timothy Isaiah Cho, and needed to do what you have suggested in many a podcast and ask myself why I was agitated. I agree with what was being said, but I was still feeling uncomfortable. I realized that it was because I have seen that with, quote, abusers or abusive leaders, we tend not to apply the truths of the previous podcast, Greg Boyd on practicing cruciform leadership. We do not ask the question, how do we love this person who is an abusive person? We do not give them the same love and grace afforded other sinners. Since we live in the times we do, let me add some defensive explanations. I'm not saying do what others have done and keep it private and move them somewhere else in the denomination, etc., sweep it under the rug. We need to bring it in the light, but also love the abusive person, not just fire them. We need to have an imagination for this, even this issue. I have found that abusive people are not always completely aware of their sin, just like regular sinners are not completely aware of their sin. They may not even realize that they are being abusive because what they are saying is truth. They're speaking the truth, but don't actually know how to love while doing it. Mm. We are actually dealing with such an issue as I write this in my church. It's complicated. It's subtle. It's messy. Mm-hmm. And then he concludes with this. I also must say that I am discovering that the systems of organization that we have set up are failing us miserably in dealing with this. We have failed more than a few victims because the system dropped them and gave them no place to be heard. Thanks for all you do. I look forward to the day that I will be listening to you almost live, though I will be sad when I am not listening to you daily. It is always a blessing as I walk my dog. Sincerely, we're going to call him Phil. Phil from Philly.
He's from Philly.
Phil from Philly.
First of all, Phil from Philly, thank you so much for that.
Yeah.
Letter. I did edit it a little bit, got permission to do that. Also, let me just comment on the reform jokes. I think we're making less now than we used to. You know, it's interesting. I do have a lot of great reform friends, and many reform people listen to this podcast. In fact, Christy and Ben and I are all licensed and ordained in reformed traditions. So I think
broadly reformed. Yes.
Broadly. It's a good natured ribbing that sometimes maybe has a little trauma behind it. But I will say that we probably have been too hard on the reformed tradition. I just want to, all jokes aside, just own that. I think it comes
Sorry,
everybody. I think it comes particularly from my experience. I'll own this. And I know that there are large reform platforms that people tend to sync up to and latch onto as the voice for what it means to be a Christian in America. And a lot of people are having issues with that. So I think I'm trying to channel that, but I also, in whatever way I've been uncharitable, I'm happy to hear specifics. I just want to own that I think I have been uncharitable and maybe even condescendingly sarcastic. I know, listener, it might be hard to believe, but I just want to own that. So I think Phil from Philly comes by that honestly.
Yeah.
Secondly, I want to just hear from Christy and Ben. What struck you from that letter? What are you noticing? What did you hear?
Man, well, first of all, I heard him share from his own personal story of what's going on in his church, right? And it is difficult. It is messy. It is complicated. Yeah. And I think it sounds like he's kind of asking, how do we tell the truth? Sounds like this person is telling the truth, but also love them. And a lot of times it seems like we have to be doing one or the other. And so how do you calibrate both of those things together? And is there a place? Because I think a lot of times, especially when abuse is at the topic, right? My tendency is like, no, get it out of here. Stop it. Get it out of here. I don't have a lot of grace for that if I'm really honest. And so what does it look like to be able to calibrate both grace and truth? To love the abuser is kind of what I hear him asking. Yep. Ben, what did you hear?
Yeah, I mean that's what I'm thinking. And you mentioned grace and truth, Christy, which is immediately where my mind goes. I mean, this is a tool that we use in our Gravity Leadership Academy training to talk about what it actually looks like to love people, because I do think we do carry around. I feel the struggle that Phil is narrating here. I feel that struggle of knowing that love is all, right? Love is the is what we're called to as Christians. But then that gets married, I think, to a definition or a vision of love that we've inherited from our, you know, just the world around us and the theologies and the different things that we've that basically equates to niceness.
Yeah, just
and
be
so
nice.
Like, yeah, loving, and so somehow in our minds, like holding an abuser accountable, sort of feels like something different than love, but in fact, It is love.
Yeah.
To hold an abuser accountable. If somebody's being truly abusive, it's not good for the person being abused, obviously, right? I think that's the wake up call that a lot of us are, and the church, church too, like all of this stuff, like there's this wake up call to say, oh, this is abusive. It's not just like, oh, boys will be boys. Like we have to stop this. We have to stop this abuse. So abuse is not good for those being abused, but also abuse is also terrible for those who abuse. It's terrible for them. It's dehumanizing. It's just awful. Yeah. And so the act of love would be to hold them accountable for their abuse, like that is love. And so I think sometimes we have trouble connecting those dots. I have a lot of other thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. And I think part of it is oftentimes our only imagination for how to stick up for those who are being abused is to sort of vilify, call out, and sort of cast out the abuser. Mm. Mm. And so I think that's where I hear Phil struggling and is like, well, wait, that doesn't feel faithful to just like, just cast them out.
Yeah.
Like, but how do we hold them accountable in a way that, that actually honors their humanity?
Yes.
Because when you're saying that, Ben, there's part of me that's like, well, and I don't know what kind of abuse Phil's talking about either, right? Somehow,
sure, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that changes it for the other listeners, but
he was commenting on the episode we did. This was years ago with Timothy Cho on spiritual abuse. So he's talking about something very specific there.
Yep.
Okay, because as a kid pastor, right? If I find out about an abuser, a sexual abuser within a church context, I'm like, you're out of here.
Right.
And I want you to be in a community that's going to love you and accept you and not accept what they do, but like love you and come alongside of you. And I want wholeness and healing for that person, but I do not want them to have access to the kids in my church.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and you shouldn't.
And
I think that's loving, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But so in spiritual abuse, I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's any different in my heart, if I'm really honest.
Well, yeah, I think that's right, Christy. I think there is, every situation is contextual, right? But I think there is a sense in which you have to, I have had experiences that I don't know if they're technically spiritual abuse, but they're definitely on the spectrum of abusive. Mm-hmm. And I can remember, for a long time, not like it was not good for me, for my functioning to be around this person.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think there is something to that, but I think the thing that I hear Phil objecting to or having questions about is perhaps this, like the worst of what we might call cancel culture, right? It's just like this, like all we have for this person now is like hate or like vilification, mm-hmm, or separation, that kind of a thing, rather than being able to sort of uphold their humanity while setting appropriate boundaries, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I did hear Phil in the letter communicate something about like maybe the abuser doesn't even know that they're abusing. He kind of alluded to that, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I think there's a lot of truth in that. I think... Yeah. There are places, and I'm saying myself included, where we are just blind. We don't know what we don't know. Mm-hmm. And unless somebody lovingly brings that to our attention, we will stay blind. Mm-hmm. But the person bringing that to the abuser's attention, wow, that is hard. Mm-hmm. And that takes real thought, real compassion, real connection, real strength, I think, and probably not by themselves.
Yeah.
So,
of course.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, maybe we can get into, I have some thoughts. Mm-hmm. And one of my thoughts gets to that comment that Phil made about sometimes abusive people are being accused of abuse and they don't see it like that. They don't recognize it as abuse. I think that, that is a question. Like, what is abuse? Is screaming at someone abuse?
Yes.
Okay. Now let's back up. Is my 2-year-old screaming at me abuse? No.
Right.
It's a 2-year-old being a 2-year-old. Is me as a 45-year-old screaming at my 2-year-old abuse? Yes. What that reveals is we have to see power in how it works. We get this in like parent-child relationships. We get the power dynamics. We know that an 8-year-old girl shoving her daddy away is different than a daddy shoving his daughter into a wall.
Right.
We get that. Okay? I'm working from the thing that most of us get, where we do see power, where we make moral judgments based on power, to an arena like the church where the pastor has power and she or he is using power in good ways, but also maybe in abusive ways, and how that is different because of the power they hold.
Yeah.
So a congregant yelling at a pastor doesn't cause the same harm, moral injury, as a pastor shouting at a congregant.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that we don't usually have that conversation. We don't know what to do with it. What we want to do is we want to put that congregant and that pastor on the same plane in Matthew 18 them. And I don't think that's sufficient to handle it. So the first thing I would say is, I think Phil is pointing out something. Most of us can't agree what abuse is. And sometimes that's because we can't see power and how that matters to what counts as abuse.
Hi, my name is Jill Brown, and I'm from Midland, Texas. I have been in a Gravity Leadership cohort for the past year and a half. I am not employed by a church, but I was interested in spiritual transformation, so I decided to join a group. At times, my life had felt like I was operating out of a fragmented, achievement-driven, broken place. But during these weekly Zoom calls, the Gravity training has helped me integrate and embody God's love in my life. And I have a greater sense of this wholeness to share with others. If you've ever felt like there was something missing in your understanding of God, or if you are curious about how God shows up in your everyday life, check out Gravity Leadership and see if it's for you.
To find out more about Gravity Leadership Academy, visit gravityleadership.com/academy.
We've been talking about it a bit on the podcast, but it's important to name, I think, because oftentimes, like you're saying, if I don't see my behavior as abusive, I just see it as like strong leadership, for example, or whatever, that helping people see power is actually a really important part of this.
Yeah,
it's actually really important to understand the difference between, someone with power leveraging that power to coerce someone else. Mm-hmm. Versus someone with relatively less power kind of raging against the machine or,
Yes.
Sarah.
What's her last name?
Schulman. McDougal?
No.
We have lots of Sarahs in our lives.
Well, there are lots
Sarah
of,
Schulman.
She hasn't Sarah been on, Schulman. Sarah Schulman. She's not been on the podcast, but she wrote a book called Conflict Is Not Abuse that outlines some of these dynamics.
Yes.
Where, so someone sort of protesting their powerless condition is different than someone with power keeping that person in a powerless condition. But in the minds of the oppressor and in the mind of the oppressor, there's actually a calculus that is the opposite of that. And so they feel abused when actually they're just experiencing conflict. Someone is objecting
opposing
to the condition that they're in. And that feels like abuse if you can't see power and don't understand that you actually have the power in this situation.
It seems like in those types of situations, even if it's conflict, there's no abuse happening, but there's conflict happening. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to name the power dynamics that are at play, even in the conflict, even if it's not
absolutely.
Abuse. So recently I was in a meeting and it was with three men. and we were talking about a conflict. And at the very beginning of the meeting, I just said, hey, I just want to name the fact that I am a woman in this room of men, and we're talking about gender. Like, even
that was a topic.
Yeah, that was the topic. Yeah. And I was like, and it was conflict. And I was thinking, I just think it's important to name it so that everybody's on the same page. Yeah. Right. Like, here I am kind of by myself, and you're asking me my opinion about some things. And that's intimidating to be in a room of men.
Yep.
Chrissy, you're a baller.
Yep.
It takes such guts and fierceness to do that with guys who you may have conflict with, who may have power that you don't have, but just in terms of gender, but also whatever else is going on. So that's what we're talking about.
Yeah. You got to name it.
I think the second thing is then, not only do we not see power, so we can't tell what abuse is, but we actually call call injurious, harmful, abusive things good.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we had a Mars Hill podcast recently, and we talked about how for over a decade, Mark Driscoll was celebrated as a strong, powerful, godly, decisive, influential leader. Who had some character flaws.
Yeah. People got saved. The church was growing.
And what we're waking up to, I think we're putting language to things that we didn't have language for before. But there was some awful shaming, awful impugning of motives, manipulative, controlling, coercive, backbiting, gossip, slandering, right? All kinds of ugly stuff that no one in that system, because Mark held a lot of power, could name as abuse as it was happening to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And some of them actually were drawn, you know, they've said this in their own words. I was drawn to the magnetism, the charisma, the force, the power. People listened to him. He got things done. He made things happen. And so one of the things that's shaking out with Mars Hill is, oh, wait, those are actually psychologists like have like diagnoses for these things. This is actually awful. There's a reason I feel bad when this happens to me. It's because it is bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think the second thing is, I mean, Mark is sort of, so I use the parent-child relationship for the power to move from something we can agree on to something that's less clear. I think Mark Driscoll, most of our listeners can agree, like there was some really bad toxic leadership happening there. But what's happening in local churches is often, sometimes less clear. So for instance, the leader themselves that Phil's talking about might be getting accused of abusive leadership. And the leader themselves might go, that's not abuse. That's good leadership. I'm a good leader. And you have a rebellious spirit, or you just want to hear the truth, or you want somebody to coddle you. You know what I mean? Or like 10,000 other things. And so I think the second thing is we just can't even agree on what kind of power should a leader carry in the church, and what shape does that power look like?
There's always a context, you know, to any of these questions. And I think it's important, like you were saying earlier, Christy, it's actually really important to know the context of what are the power dynamics in this specific situation, because only after we examine those things and look at, okay, well, what did he say? And what did she say? And what, you know what I mean? Like what happened? Only until we can get to what actually happened and explore the power dynamics, can we understand whether there's conflict or there's abuse. Right. And so I think that there is a knee-jerk defensiveness that powerful people have when they see this dialogue and this discourse about power dynamics. I think there's a knee-jerk defensiveness that a lot of people have to jump to a hypothetical scenario where they are, you know, unfairly accused or, you know, that kind of a thing.
Go ahead. Can I get an example of this? I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off, Ben, if you want to finish.
That'd be helpful, probably.
I was a younger man. I was young and foolish, and perhaps, as the story will show, slightly wicked. I was in a ongoing, behind-the-scenes, kind of not direct, but like a passive-aggressive conflict with the elders of my church. Mm-hmm. And they decided to change a policy in our church that directly impacted me for the staff, and they delivered it through our secretary in staff meeting, a female administrative assistant.
Okay.
And as soon as she started talking, I realized what was happening. I realized this isn't her talking. This is the elders doing this thing. And this conflict between me and the elders, she became the head of the spear coming at me. And I responded with intensity and anger. And I sort of asked her four or five questions. Very, you know how intense I can be. Very intense, very angry, very pointed, very upset. It wasn't until I saw tears in her eyes that I realized I'm giving her way more heat than I should be. Didn't even occur to me that I was mistreating this woman in public, in a meeting, because I was so upset and sort of like reactive to this other conflict that was playing out here in front of us.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
After the meeting, went to her. So I'm very sorry. I lost my temper with you. This isn't your fault. I think I sat with her for 10 or 20 minutes apologizing. I never apologized to the staff. At the time, I was unable to see how my position at the church and my gender in that room made what I just did not just a mistake, not just conflict, but that was an abusive thing I did to her.
Right.
I committed a relational transgression that I could not undo it with an apology. I think I'm gonna get to more of this in a bit. But I guess I'm putting flesh on this saying, at the time, me being upset, me being passionate, me having a great, I mean, I had a really good argument for why this was a bad move by our church. None of it mattered, Ben. None of it mattered.
Yeah. Yeah. In a sense, you sort of shot your great argument in the foot, right?
Well, the argument wasn't the victim there.
Yeah.
Right. She was the
right.
Victim
well, there. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But but I think it's maybe worth also noting that Christy, unfortunately, lost her internet connection right in the middle of this podcast recording. So, that's why.
Thank you, Colorado Springs.
That's why Matt and I are talking about her question. She may be able to log back in, but, listeners, I just wanted to let you know that her conspicuous silence is, there for a reason.
So I offer that as an example, Ben, of what we're talking about here. Like, yes. Look, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Thousands and thousands of male leaders have at one point felt righteous indignation, passionate, intense, that there was some violation or some wrong being done to them or to somebody else, and what I would call powered up on somebody like that.
Right.
Powered up on them.
Right.
And I would say, this happened to me 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I could not see that as, I saw it as a mistake. I saw it as something to ask for forgiveness for. I didn't see it as a misuse of power.
Yes.
Which makes it abuse.
Yes. Yes.
And can I extend that one more place? I think 15 years later, I'm beginning to see how that is, but there are still thousands and thousands of people who don't see that as a misuse of power. And abuse. That's what I want to say.
Yes. Yes, I think that's right. So there's the definitional question here. But I think there's also that knee-jerk defensiveness as well, to worry about the most extreme thing that might happen, right? If I don't hold on to this ability to kind of, use my power in ways that I anticipate I might need to, to defend myself against unjust accusations and all that kind of thing. So
that's just it. I felt like I was losing power. Somebody else was winning. I was losing power, which if you listen, by the way, if you listen to people who oppose survivor-centric trauma-informed investigations, they say it's because the accused won't get a fair, quote, trial. It's about power. And they're actually some of this pushback is correct. Not that they won't get a fair trial, but the power gets tilted away from where it's always tilted, and it gets tilted towards the people who've been who are contending for harm and abuse that has happened.
Yes.
People who are powerful people who don't have power on their side get scared spitless when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you know the old quote, it's not that old, but I've heard a number of people say it, that when you are accustomed to having power, I'm paraphrasing here, equality feels like oppression. Equality can feel like oppression because you just don't understand that you've weighed 200 more pounds than everybody else in the room.
Yes.
To metaphorically speaking, right?
Yes.
You just don't understand that you losing this power, number one, is actually creating equality and fairness and justice, perhaps. But also you losing this power might be it might be great for you.
Mm.
It might be really good for you. It could teach you a whole new way of relating to people. You might not have to rely on that anymore. You could actually hold an open hand and name what you want and submit yourself to people.
Okay, that's the way into the third point I wanted to make, Ben.
Okay.
Which is, we have to learn how to see like what is abuse, how power, positional power, relational power entails that. And then what is the kingdom of God? How does the kingdom of God change the way we conceive of power, how it's carried, what it's for?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you mentioned coming alongside, coming underneath. I would say that the world defines power as the power to control and coerce and get what you want. I would say the kingdom of God talks about power as the power to love, the power to serve, the power to empower and lay down your life for somebody else's flourishing.
Yes.
And so the third thing I want to say here is a part of reckoning with this wrong is getting our minds around and our churches and our bodies centered in what actually is the power that runs the universe. And is it you getting your way with the elders? Or is it a crucified and risen Jesus?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And I think then we're back to Phil's juxtaposition in this email was the spiritual abuse, the issue of spiritual abuse versus cruciform leadership, cruciform power.
Yes.
And I think that's a great way of connecting those two things. That actually is our call, is to embrace the power of love, the power of the cross, and leave behind every other definition of power. So if I can leave behind my desire to control things, I think the fear that a lot of, you mentioned people who oppose trauma-centered investigations for abuse allegations and things like that. And oftentimes what I see in their responses is the fear of losing power, but also the assumption that if I allow this to happen, someone else is going to come in here and take this power to control things that I've had, and they're going to use it against me.
Yes.
And so the imaginative gridlock is the only thing that power is, and the only way that power works is it is the power to control, and I can't give that up because, these people are going to come for me. Yeah. They're going to obviously take up this, there's this lack of imagination about just love and what love might do,
Yes.
Like what the power of love might do in this situation. Maybe it wouldn't try to control.
Can I get preachy for a second? Welcome back, Christy.
Welcome back.
How was your hiatus in the middle of the podcast? Did you treat yourself?
Must be nice. Must be nice to be able to take a break right in the middle of a podcast.
Oh my gosh.
It's a love-hate relationship with the internet. Get preachy with us. Preach to us.
Listen, this is, so what we're talking about is repenting of the power, the conceptualization of power that crucified Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
The logic that most of us operate in that conceives of power that is operative in these situations is the same logic that led people to think killing God was a good idea. Listen, what are we going to do? The Pharisees said at their council. This is John chapter 11. Jesus is doing many miraculous signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. Then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our people. Mm-hmm. One of them, Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, told them, y'all are idiots. You don't see it's better for you that one man die than for the people, rather than the whole nation to be destroyed. Right? The good thing Jesus was doing threatened their power to the degree that they had to kill the good thing. This is the satanic power that lives, I think, in each of us and in our church systems and creates, I think, difficulties when we're dealing with abuse allegations because we don't want the Romans to come and take our power.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have one more thing.
Hold on to it for dear life.
Sorry, y'all. I feel passionate about this. The final thing is, I think Phil from Philly, we haven't forgot about you, Phil. He asked, how do we love the person who's accused of abuse? And I just want to say, Phil, that person has to want to be loved. Mm-hmm. That person has to want love, which means that person has to want to lay down their lives for his friends. That person has to want to take allegations against them seriously. That person has to want to understand that the best thing that could happen to them is that they would be able to repent, to recant of wrong, to repair wrongdoing, to reconcile with people. I think far too often people who get accused of wrongdoing, they actually don't want to be loved in that situation. They want to be right and protected.
Yeah.
Vindicated. Yeah. They want to be vindicated, not loved. And yeah. I would say that Phil, like the situation you're dealing with, the person who's getting allegations. I mean, Ben and I are new at this. Christy, I know you are too. But Ben and I are trying to talk about this with our church. And I've said a few times, I think it's made Ben uncomfortable. But that's really not all that odd, actually. I've said a few times to our church, if somebody accuses any leader here of wrongdoing, you must take it seriously. It must be reported. And that person will submit to a full survivor-centric investigation. You have to hear that from me. Even if it's the person that you think couldn't do any harm, we are taking everything seriously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For what it's worth, Matt, I'm fully on board. So I don't want to give our listeners the
sound like it might have been a little weird. I tend to say things a little more starkly and baldly than maybe you had been. That's what I was trying to refer to.
Okay. Oh, I see.
Not that you're not for that. Go ahead, Christy.
But you know what? You guys both standing up for that is important. I think somebody recently asked me, like, what's your relationship with power like? Hmm. And I've been kind of chewing on that in like lots of different areas of my life. But actually, like right after we're recording this podcast, I see a counselor every week, and it's great. It's like real good stuff is happening there. But part of it is because, and I think I've mentioned this on podcast before, but there's abuse in my background. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, the way that I see power is really skewed because there has been abuse. And what does it look like to have a healthy imagination, like for people like you who are in power at a church, to say, if there is any kind of accusation, there will be an investigation, is so good for me on the other side of it to hear somebody say, like, no, we're taking this seriously. And we need more leaders, like within the church and even outside the church, to stand up and say, no, like, we're not afraid to actually have an investigation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
What else would we want? Why wouldn't we want it? You know what I mean? Like if I am unjustly accused as a leader, why wouldn't I want the truth to come out? Mm-hmm. You know, like I feel that, like I would want to be loved in that situation, but I also would want the truth to come out. Right. And if I am being falsely,
yes,
like that person falsely accusing me, they need to be cared for too. Obviously something's going on there.
Yes.
If it's completely false, like, well, my goodness, let's care for them too. What's going on?
Yes.
But let's let the truth come out. Right. You know?
And there's got to be an asterisk here, maybe a bolded asterisk in giant letters. And that's this. The vast majority of sexual assault, sexual abuse, verbal, emotional, physical abuse cases do not get reported.
Right.
They don't ever get talked about or reported. Then the bolded in larger all caps is the vast majority that do get reported are true.
Yes.
Because of the cultural, social, emotional, relational, spiritual cost of bringing your shame into the light and becoming the pariah who's bringing down the great man who yelled at you that one time, why don't you just forgive him? Were you trying to hit on him? Are you trying to ruin his marriage? It is such a cost to name this publicly that very few cases end up being false accusations. So even to mention false accusations in this conversation, I want to punctuate that it's very rare.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's really important to name that it's very rare. It relates, I think, to common fears. And you kind of brought this up too, Christy, but it relates to common fears that we have about these things, that powerful people have about these things. So I think both of those things are really helpful to name.
Yes.
Man, we could talk about this for
another hour. Oh my gosh, I'm just getting going. I got my hair, I got my dander up, is what they say. I don't know who they is.
But. Yeah, it's important. I'm glad Phil wrote us the letter. Thank you so much, Phil.
Can I just say one final thing? I'm sorry. One final thing. How do we love the person who's an abusive person? We tell them the way to walk through this is to do what Jesus did. Listen to your accusers. Let's get an impartial investigation. Let's get the truth to come out. Yeah. Like, if you need to recant, repent, and repair and reconcile, then I want you to do that. If this person in some small statistical category is falsely accusing you, they need help. Yeah. And I want to walk with you to lay down your life for him or for her. Mm-hmm. They need help.
Yeah.
Right? And our church can learn about your love and your humility, and we'll support you and we'll give you whatever you need. I'm just going to say, like, it's not just say you're sorry and move on.
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. We don't understand repentance when it comes to this stuff. We need to recant publicly. We need to repair, make reparations. What does that mean? Well, it's probably physical, emotional, relational, takes time. It might even take some of your money. Make reparations. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, reconciliation may happen, but it's not up to you if it does. And there's tons of confusion about, you know, too many leaders, I think, who are caught or who are guilty, get on a platform, make some kind of apology, and think that we've repented. And that is not getting out of a tree, inviting Jesus to lunch, and giving away four times of more than you've taken. Mm-hmm. That is not repentance. So I just want to be clear about that as we leave.
Yeah.
We need to get out of here. Phil from Philly, thanks for listening. Thanks for putting up with our C-minus reform jokes. And thank you for the work you're trying to do in your church to create a healthy system and to create a place of life and flourishing for everyone. So until next time.
Yep. Blessings, y'all.
Peace.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Leadership Podcast. If you're finding it helpful or enjoyable, we'd love it if you'd tell your friends about it.
Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. And you can join our Gravity community online for free at gravityleadership.com/join.
You'll get our latest content delivered straight to your inbox, as well as our email most Fridays with curated links to articles we find interesting and helpful. To join us, go to gravityleadership.com/join.
Our podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the show. You can check out his work at aaronsternke.com.
We'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravityleadership.com/message and click the Start Recording button.
You can also email us at podcast@gravityleadership.com. Catch you next time.